Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I'm Michael Footer.
Each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 59, Future Sight, Trends and Learning from the Xbox Series X, Extra Small Small, and PlayStation 5 launches.
Hey, everybody.
We did it.
We did it. We are here in our second launch conversation. This is a launch bonus episode. As we talked about in our news show from a couple days ago.
I'm sure you all listened to it. It was brilliant. We were funny. And we're back.
This is the second of three scheduled planned conversations. We are really excited for the last one that we have planned, which is on accessibility. We'll be talking with Steve Saylor from Can I Play That?
I'm going to see if I can wrangle up some additional quotes from additional accessibility friends of mine and contacts in the industry. So we might have a little, even a little more color than just our conversation with Steve, although Steve is absolutely an expert.
Indeed. So last week we talked about diversity and inclusion and specifically around the pricing conversations.
And quite frankly, about Xbox Game Pass.
Absolutely. So Xbox Game Pass and both of the digital versions of these consoles, both the Extra Small Small and the PlayStation 5 Digital Edition, and how those open the door for more people to enjoy the hobby earlier in the generation, and why that's important for who feels empowered and able to engage in the industry as a member of it. Whether that is someone in the game development side of the industry or the completely different and not the at all the same piece of the world, the media industry, about games, because both of those have different access issues.
That's right. And they both definitely have access issues.
So we are tackling launch in a very virtual economy way. We're looking at things with
We're being weird.
We're looking at things with a different angle. But this episode, we're going to be looking at the launch through the business lens, unsurprisingly. But we're also going to be doing something we don't usually do on this show.
We're going to be talking about video games.
We are actually going to be talking about our experiences with some of the games.
I'm so excited to talk about video games on this video game business podcast.
It's weird. I mean, it's not that we don't play video games, because boy, we play a lot of video games. Some of them we can talk about because they're out and we bought them as consumers. Some of them are related to our work and we cannot talk about. But we're going to be talking about the ones we can talk about.
Hooray!
All right, so
but before we get there, we talked a little bit last week about the setup for the Xbox Series X.
Right, and I assume the S is the same way. We do not have an extra small small.
No.
But we have heard that a number of things. For instance, a friend of ours who has an extra small small.
I love that that's canon now.
Yes. Took their external drive from their Xbox One, plugged it into the extra small small, copied some stuff onto it. Now they're going to be able to take that drive and copy stuff onto the Xbox Series X. That the ability to move that drive around to anything in the Xbox One or Xbox Series family is really, really powerful.
Absolutely.
But the setup, we did talk about the setup last time. So when you're setting up the Xbox Series X or the extra small small, it took us 3 minutes.
We
used the app. It was very easy. At that point when we talked about it, had we set up
No, we'd set up the PlayStation, and we were a little bit frustrated, and by a little bit frustrated, I mean I was very salty about it, because that's, of course, the console that I set up.
Yes.
Because I was like, give me bug snacks.
So, it was a significantly longer process, and we're going to talk a little bit in a few minutes about some of the challenges around that. Now, you can bring, we have an external drive attached to both of our PlayStation. I have one attached to my PlayStation.
No, I have one attached to my PlayStation. I do not have one for my Xbox One sitting on my desk. I don't need it.
Sure.
I don't tend to use my Xbox One nearly as much. I use it for things like Spiritfarer.
Yes.
And Tell Me Why. And things that I could, in theory, play on my PC, but I have a very, very pretty Cyberpunk Special Edition Xbox. I need to have excuses to use it instead of just staring at it.
All right. Yes. Sorry, I just got a text on my phone from the pizza delivery.
Ah, pizza.
Kids are getting pizza tonight.
All right, pizza.
So it was a little bit longer. It was less streamlined to set up the PlayStation. We tried
That's
to
a
port,
kind way of putting it.
We tried to port over profiles, but as I tried to port over profiles, it told me it was going to take 21 hours.
No.
23 hours. So we're like, oh, we'll just do this later. By the way, you cannot actually do that piece of it later. You can copy over stuff from over the network or direct LAN cable if you want. But you cannot later copy profiles over. You have to log into them. So we logged into all of the kids' profiles.
Yeah.
And all of that.
So it's really helpful if you don't necessarily remember your PlayStation Network password and you're like, I don't know, I'm just going to like copy everything over. But for us, we already knew everybody's passwords for the most part. And we needed to make some changes to the little ones' PlayStation accounts to make sure that they were properly being controlled under the family accounts.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I really was surprised to discover and pleased by with the PlayStation 5. Now, we thought that my primary PlayStation 4 is the one in the living room where the kids play. Now, I have the largest library of all of us.
You are meticulous with your PlayStation Plus.
I'm every month. I think I've missed one Xbox Games with Gold game ever. And that was an accident.
I can't fathom it. I forget all the time. I don't care. I'm like, I don't know. There's cool stuff here.
So I check. I do it at the beginning of the month when they go live. And then I double check, like, oh, did I do this at the end of the month? And inevitably, I've done it.
Like I said, meticulous.
So the kids have access to all those games. Now, I was afraid that we were going to have to make my PlayStation 5 my account, like that, my primary for the account. You don't actually have to do that on the PlayStation.
As it turns out, you can have completely separate primaries for your PlayStation 4 and your PlayStation 5. So I can keep my primary PlayStation 4 on my desk. Mike can keep his primary out in the living room. And our primary PlayStation 5 can live in our office.
Where we are playing on it for work and soon fun. Most of the play we've done on it, not to say that we haven't had fun, but it's been in service of things like this podcast.
Bugsnax.
Yeah, or Bugsnax.
Bugsnax.
So one of the things that people have identified, remember smart delivery? Like Microsoft's like, oh, we're going to do smart delivery. It's going to put the right version of your game on the right console. And people are like,
no,
okay. That's interesting, but also, why wouldn't it do that? Like, that's a weird thing. Like, why wouldn't you automatically put the Series X version on my Series X? There have been some problems with the PlayStation 5, downloading the wrong version, playing the wrong version. There were reviewers.
Specifically, I was about to say, specifically with Spider-Man Remastered.
Well, Spider-Man Remastered isn't as much, because those are two different SKUs. It's Call of Duty where it's been a big problem.
Oh, it was Call of Duty that was the problem.
Watch Dogs could be a problem. Mm. Assassin's Creed could potentially be a problem, downloading the wrong one. Any game where it's not a different, where it's not truly a different SKU. Because Spider-Man Remastered, you don't automatically get if you own Spider-Man.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I forgot that that was the case.
We bought that I could twist your rubber arm to finally play Spider-Man.
As it turns out, my arm has been twisted, and I will tell you all about that very soon.
Yes. So I'm more impressed by the smart delivery thing. Now, both consoles in the libraries allow you to filter by console.
Yes.
So you can actually see which one, if you only have one of them installed on the PS5, you can actually see which one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really impressed by the storage, by how quick everything is on both consoles. So
it is kind of, it's shocking. Like, it is night and day difference. We'll get to the real specifics soon, but man, I could not believe how quickly even, like, some really hefty games were moving.
Yeah, and now we have, for that purpose, we have the PlayStation 5 connected to Ethernet.
Yes.
We have the Xbox Series X connected to Ethernet. So we're getting, and we have Fios, we have gigabit fiber. So we're pretty good on
that. It's rather fibrous in our house.
It is very fibrous, very regular. So,
I set them up and you knock them down.
It's true. So, I mean, that's one of the things we noticed. The other thing that we noticed is both consoles support resuming your game in a very interesting way.
It's so fascinating. Like, on the Series X, and this is the one where I've spent the most time. Like, I've spent most of my time on the Series X, and Mike has spent the vast majority of his time over on the PlayStation 5.
Yes.
So,
I have played some Yakuza, I played some Ori. Ori looks unbelievable. It's super sampled 6K.
Okay, well, but Mike, well, we're not talking about games yet.
Oh.
Okay. We're talking about games yet. We're talking about Quicker Zoom.
Okay.
Yes. Like, stay on task.
Yes.
Okay.
I've played all of Astrobot, and that quick resume. I mean, it's related.
It's not related.
Okay.
Anyway,
so talk about quick resume on the Xbox.
So quick resume on the Xbox is really interesting because you can have a multitude of different games going on at the same time and not know it, mm-hmm. like at all, because it doesn't have as intuitive as of an interface as like the PlayStation 5. The PlayStation mm-hmm. 5 interface, I think, has the better interface. It's cleaner. It's more user friendly. I don't feel like I'm constantly getting lost.
It's new-gen-ier.
I mean, sure. Let's go with it's new-gen-ier. I'll allow that for like this one time. So on the Xbox though, it's interesting because I often felt like I didn't know what other games I was playing. I could be playing like Tetris Effect Connected, which I did play. And then I would bounce over to Assassin's Creed Valhalla and it would just quick resume and I'm just like, what is this sorcery?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Both consoles, this is a commonality between them. If you power the console off entirely or you lose power, both of them will quick resume. Both of them will allow you to pick up where you left off.
It's true. So you're not losing a ton of time or whatever. I don't understand how that storage architecture works, but it is fascinating.
It is. Now, on the PlayStation 5, I had to test that unexpectedly, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Demon Souls, I lost power to my PlayStation 5. This is a slight tease for what we're about to talk about.
Yes.
Lost some power on the PlayStation 5 and turned it back on. I'm like, I lost all my Demon Souls progress. And nope. It's not as intuitive. You have to go into the activities and you hit square to resume. So you have to, it's not quite as intuitive as opening up the game on Xbox.
But you can still resume just clicking on the game. You do not need to use it through that specific quick resume. Oh, really? You can just click on it because I did the same thing.
With Spidey Remastered, yeah.
Yeah, so yesterday I had to end up quick resuming after some time away and I just chose the game.
Yep.
Just like on Xbox. I like using the contextual menu, but mm-hmm. you don't have to use the contextual menu.
Apparently, when you're doing collectibles and stuff in games that support activities, it's very easy because of the activities to bounce between those, and it really streamlines.
Yeah.
Some of those side mission stuff. It's really neat. That context menu
is so crisp. Like even we're talking about this from the design perspective, it's just so clean.
So here's my thinking about this, and I bring this up because both consoles support this in some way, especially after a complete power shutdown. Your computer is buzzing, and it's hilarious.
It's so frustrating. I'm so mad at my computer.
You're gonna have to blow
the
dust out of that thing.
It's not the dust. The problem.
Something's loose.
No, if I do this, it's because it's on the ground.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's because it's on the ground.
Okay.
I don't know what the problem is.
So interestingly. I'm waiting for somebody like Kojima to do something where, no, but listen to me. You're thinking about like the Psycho Mantis fight in Metal Gear Solid where you had to switch.
100%.
Stop.
Yeah.
You know what that is though, right?
No.
So, it made you switch the controller to the second port in order to be able to fight him.
Was that in the first Metal Gear?
That was Metal Gear Solid 1. Or else if you kept it in the first controller port. He would predict all your movement. He would read your mind. So he would block everything. So you had to switch it to the second controller part. He's like, I can't read your mind. Also, there was some cool stuff where he would read other saves from Konami games on your memory card. And he would talk about them. I see you like to play Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
I mean, who doesn't?
It's true. So I'm very interested to see if someone does an Eternal Darkness type thing or a Kojima style thing where it shuts the power off on your console and makes you turn it back on like a horror game that does that in the middle. Yeah.
Actually, that could be really cool. That's some Silent Hill nonsense.
And you turn it back on and then you click in and then something weird happens as soon as you click back in.
You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of Doki Doki Literature Club. It really does, because there's, like, that breaking with reality where you're not sure if you're still in the game or if the game is in you.
Ooh, that's also creepy. I don't want a game in me. so, I see that there is an opportunity, because of how cool Quick Resume is, for developers who are very creative to find ways to use that as a gameplay technique. Just like the memory cards, just like switching controller ports.
Sure, but that would, I mean, that also... that also ends up creating some potential problems too, because it's like, I can only use this on PlayStation, so you only can develop this for PlayStation. Well, I guess
you can,
well,
use,
I mean,
it,
you
for...
can use it on Xbox
exactly.
as well.
Exactly.
But I, that still feels like it's more of a thing that PlayStation would be like, no, do it exclusively for us.
Maybe. And that's, and we'll talk about that in a little bit.
The philosophical differences?
In fact, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the controllers a little bit.
Let us please talk about the controllers a little bit. They both feel very good.
And, you know, this is where I feel like the controllers are the perfect expression of the philosophical differences thing that you and I have been talking about for months.
Yes.
Whereas the Xbox Series X controller is a lovely iteration on the wonderful Xbox One controller.
Oh yeah, like
the,
seriously.
There are things that it does differently and better. The grips on the triggers, that texturing on the back
is so
it's
nice.
It's slightly smaller so it can fit more hands.
Which is great for me because I have small hands and I tend to struggle sometimes with more, with like the bigger controllers. I know I really mm-hmm. struggled with the Xbox controller, like the original Xbox controller.
Oh yeah, the
controller.
Duke?
The Duke was just like, it was too much for me. I've struggled with the N64 controller. I know that I have also struggled with, I think for the PlayStation 2 controller was also a little bit big
for
me.
The DualShock 2, yeah.
The DualShock 2 was a bit big for me. So like, I tend to struggle with that. But on the other hand, we've got the PlayStation 5 controller.
The DualSense.
So the DualSense is just a little bit too big for my hands, but it's not so much so that my hands get cramped up from holding it.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, Mike, you have more experience with
sure.
those haptic triggers.
Yes,
than
I played
I
all
do.
Of Astrobot, and Astrobot is, first of all, it's a competent platformer. But more importantly, it is a showpiece for the DualSense controller. Now, if you haven't had a chance to...
It's a glorious tech demo.
It is. If you haven't had a chance to play a game with the DualSense, because you may have one, you might not be able, you might not have a PS5 yet, or you might have held the controller but haven't been able to play with it yet, Astrobot is a must-play for a couple of reasons. Number one, every one of Astrobot's footsteps mm-hmm. is translated through the haptics. Now, if you're running on grass versus running on snow versus running through the mud or through puddles, it all feels different.
It does. Like, it feels different. You have the sounds coming out through the speaker.
It uses that speaker, which was present in the DualShock 4 also very, very well.
Yeah, very, very well. So these are completely different.
But the big thing is the haptic triggers.
The haptic triggers are the big things. I struggle with the haptic triggers. I like them. I've played Spider-Man. Spider-Man makes good use of them, and so does Watch Dogs Legion. So the big problem that I've had is my hands get tired.
And mine too. And this is something I noticed playing Astrobot. Now, I played Astrobot.
Do I just need more calisthenics?
I don't know. I played Astrobot in 2 or 3 sittings. It's not a terribly long game. But it also, again, like when you're pulling back the bow... is one where you definitely get the sense of like it's fighting you, you know, to knock the arrow and pull it back.
Right.
So
same kind of deal when you're driving a car
mm-hmm.
in Watch Dogs Legion is
yes.
that it's gonna fight you for control because you're in a very fast car that you maybe shouldn't be going full speed at because you're going to end up hurting.
Wrapping your car around a light pole.
Oops. Are you trying to call me out on this?
No.
We'll get there.
No.
All right.
So, you know, but obviously you can't, and this is one of the things that I didn't plan for us to talk about, but I want to. So our youngest loves Bugsnax, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And we have been making use of the streaming capabilities of the PlayStation 4. So she has been streaming, when we're not playing it, she's been streaming Bugsnax from our PS5 to the living room PS4, and it's worked really well. Now, you can't do that with Astrobot, because Astrobot... The entire experience, some of it...
is in the DualSense.
Now, I think you might be able to play it because it does have gyroscopics. It does have motion control. It doesn't have a microphone on it, so you can't blow into it. Like, you could blow into a DS. The 3DS allowed you to do that.
Yeah, definitely. But now I kind of want to go check it out and see if we can play Astro Bot.
It might not let you.
4. It might not let you. But yeah, like, it's really interesting. I love that feature. I love that we're able to say, Viv, we're working in here, you know.
But we're not using the PlayStation.
But we're not
you
using
can
the
stream.
PlayStation. So.
I'm sure that Miles Morales will get used that way.
Because I know that that both of the boys are excited about that, or our son and our NB are excited about that. So we'll see what happens there. The one thing that I do want to call out on the Xbox Series X controller is one of the things that was a big challenge for me last generation that Sony had a workaround for, but Microsoft didn't, is that they essentially took away a button on the DualShock 4 and the Xbox One controller because they turned, you know, start and select or start and back. That back button turned into a share button.
Yes.
Now, Sony was lucky because they had the touchpad and the touchpad had a button on it.
Yes.
So that served as your mini map or your sub menu or your inventory button, right? But on Xbox, by the time you got to the end of the generation, like that, they weren't using the share button as a share button. They're like, you know, we need a back button. So now the controller has a dedicated share button.
Which is smart.
And it still has its two, and now it still has those two buttons, but then it has an additional share button.
That's right.
So that share button mirrors kind of what the touchpad, mirrors the share button on the PlayStation.
That's right.
And the back button slash touchpad button are accessing your inventory or whatever. But in terms of the controllers, now I love the DualSense. My big concern right now about the DualSense controller is that it offers features, and I'm going to liken it to the Switch's HD Rumble.
I'm sorry, the HD Rumble that no one uses?
That no one uses. In fact, I will go one further and say it was like the Wii U touchpad screen, where by the end, even Nintendo wasn't really using it on Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, unless you were playing on handheld mode and not on TV mode.
That's true. I know that Pikmin 3 made good use of it.
Sure. And Zombie U, which was one of the launch
games.
Made very good use of it because you had to look down and were using your backpack. It was like rummaging through your backpack and not as aware of your surroundings. You had to keep kind of peripheral vision on the television.
True.
So... I think that the DualSense, I don't know if people if third parties are going to end up using the speaker. Again, we had this problem with during the PlayStation 4 era, and I don't know if they're going to be able to use those triggers terribly well unless Sony has a way to make it easy and to incentivize it. Because it's not something that you will see on PC, it's not something you're going to see on Xbox. Now, if it does get easy and if it is something that has a game-changing impact on the way people purchase games if they're multi-console owners, then I think
that's the incentive by itself.
That's the incentive, and I think at that point Microsoft has to look at this and go, we might need to do something.
And we'll have to see. Microsoft doesn't tend to be particularly reactionary. They tend to be very big planners, so we will have to see how that goes. Mike, let's talk about 3D audio.
So one of the things I found out because I was tinkering right now, we bought the PlayStation Pulse headset, which you can turn it on. It works wirelessly with the PlayStation 5 via dongle.
It's very helpful.
Or you can plug it right into the controller.
Yes.
Now, I plugged it in. I've actually been using it on our Xbox Series X.
Yes.
Which apparently the Xbox One has had 3D audio through the controller for years, and I did not realize it.
Yes. I actually have it enabled on my Series, or on my Xbox One X on my desk.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah.
So you can turn on the Windows version of that. You can also buy the Dolby. There's an app for Dolby, and there's an app for...
Dolby Atmos, I believe.
Right, and DTS, I think.
Yes, I think that you are correct. So the 3D audio is really interesting. I think that it's going to end up being... It's going to end up being like a solo gaming game changer, and it's also going to be super helpful when you're sitting down and playing multiplayer games. I'd love to see how Overwatch uses this. This set, like Overwatch 2 would end up using 3D audio.
Now, right now, it is not available. It's only available through headphones on the PlayStation 5.
That's right.
So you can't actually... I think they're planning on doing it in a way where you can pick a 3D audio profile with a soundbar or something.
Yeah, like that. Exactly. So that's something that Mark Cerny talked about over on... That's something that Mark Cerny and his nerd ASMR conversation was all about, was talking about 3D audio being more about the living room than just being about a set of headphones. But that capability, as far as I know, is not baked into the console currently.
Yes. And I tried to tinker around with it, and it is not there yet. Okay. So moving on real quickly, because we don't want to spend too much time in this episode. You know, this has been talked about widely, but we are seeing living room consoles and the software in this generation already start to offer multiple options. Now, when the PlayStation
PlayStation 4 Pro mm-hmm. and the Xbox One S came out, and then, of course, into the Xbox One X, mm-hmm. We started to see options, and they were labeled as, like, performance mode or fidelity mode. Now we're starting to see that with a lot more granularity.
Yeah, like, we're talking about settings that I'm used to seeing on my PC.
Like anti-aliasing yeah. and occlusion and all that stuff.
That's right. And that level of granularity doesn't just stop in video, and we'll get to that in just a few minutes when we talk about accessibility.
Yes. So that's something we noticed. And in fact, a lot of games are starting you now with the settings.
Yes.
And helping you customize your experience to your playstyle. Now, I am someone who definitely can tell the difference between 30 frames per second and 60 frames per second. You are not, which is good for you because it makes the decision to use things like ray tracing very easy. For me, it's like, oh, which one do I use? Because I really love the frames. And
I mean, I notice it sometimes. It's especially, I mean, if it's really janky, I notice it, but I don't tend to notice it if it's still butter smooth, regardless of how I look at it. Well, it's like
locked 30, a solid 30. It's going to be harder to notice it than if it's a variable.
Exactly. If it's a little bit more difficult for me to see it if it's already locked in. And for me, audio fidelity is something that I notice that very few people sure. tend to notice. I know the difference between what a quality headset is versus just like a cheapy headset or whatever, mm-hmm. because I know what that experience is supposed to be. Whereas I don't think anyone else in our household would necessarily notice, but I always do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of the Pulse headset, it sounds great when it's on your head. As you, the user, wearing it sounds great. It does not set the microphone on it is, it's not a boom mic.
It's tinny.
It's tinny and a little bit muffled.
Yes.
And I think that's because the microphone is baked in. It's right near the driver. There's a pinhole. It's a pinhole mic instead of a boom mic.
Yeah.
And I think that actually negatively impacts the quality for everybody you might be speaking to. But if you're only going to use it for solo gaming, I can definitely recommend the Pulse headset.
It's beautiful. And you don't have to do anything with it to conform it to your head either.
Yeah.
Because Mike's head's bigger than mine, and we don't have to do anything.
Yeah, it doesn't have, it's not adjustable in the way a typical headset like the A40s or the A50s are. It doesn't slide up and down those poles. Instead, it uses the PlayStation VR kind of adaptive banding that conforms more specifically and based on how you put it on your head.
That's right. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the hardware problems yeah. that we've had. We'll spend a little bit of time here. We don't want to spend too much time on this. So something that we have noticed a little bit of on the Xbox Series X is that sucker gets loud. Yeah,
now we haven't had a major problem with it.
I've heard it.
Yes.
No, I've heard it. I definitely have heard it on the Xbox Series X.
I'm trying to think, what disc do we have? Do we have any discs?
There was a disc. We put a disc. Oh,
I put disc. I installed some stuff off of disc.
You did, and it ended up worrying. It yeah. wasn't nearly as bad as some of the things that our friends have experienced.
Oh, yeah.
But it was not like a 747. It's not like my computer yeah. sounds when it's trying to take off.
So just be aware, and it seems to be happening a lot with 4K discs as opposed to just Blu-ray discs.
Right.
So if you're running an Xbox One disc in there or a Blu-ray movie, you might not have the problems. You put a 4K UHD disc in there, you might hear it a little bit more. The big problem that we're having, though, is with our PlayStation 5. Now, this has happened twice.
So, yes. So the first time that it ended up happening, you were playing Demon's Souls.
I was. And it suddenly crashed to rest mode.
Yeah.
And I thought I had hit something or shifted on the couch or bumped something on the controller. And then it happened two more times and I started panicking. So this is one of the many problems people are reporting with the PlayStation 5. There's this. There's download errors. There are problems when you're using an external drive. Remember how we talked about the ability to plug in a PlayStation 4 formatted external drive to copy your games over or to play them right off of that storage?
Buggy as heck.
So that's a big problem. But I went in to safe mode, I rebuilt the database, and it got better on Demon's Souls. You had a problem with it with Spider-Man Remastered yesterday, which, again, that game in particular... And I didn't have a problem with Astrobot. I played Astrobot from start to finish. It didn't happen
once. I almost cried. I was really starting to get in the groove with Spidey. You know, I was starting to move through the story. I'm like, okay, all right, I see it now. I see why everybody's really excited. You know, traversal is super cool. I'm psyched. Then it crashed to rest mode, and I'm like,
Yeah, and then it happened two more times. We rebuilt the database, and it happened some more.
It happened twice more after that.
So right now we're at the place where we deleted the game and re-downloaded it. Now that has been a fix for some people.
It seems to have been a fix for us so far.
So far.
But I also haven't put a multitude of hours into it since we did that last night because, you know, we played Dead by Daylight, so.
Yes. So that's, it's something we're keeping our eyes on. If this is a systemic problem with the hardware, like, it, we're watching it because remember the Xbox 360 era with the Red Rings.
We talked about this on the last episode. We talked about the Red Ring of Death. If this is similar to that Red Ring of Death, that haunted Microsoft.
It did. So if you've got a PlayStation 5 error, there are a couple of different things you can try. If you don't know where to find that stuff, hit us up on Twitter. We can point you towards it.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about, we mentioned games presenting settings at the beginning. You are leading up Valhalla, so Assassin's Creed Valhalla and Watch Dogs Legion.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what it's like when you start those games up?
So when you start those games up, they, especially with Valhalla, this was really interesting. It's a very granular setup.
Yeah.
So not only are you making sure that your brightness and your contrast are doing what they need to do, you are also making sure that you are tuning your difficulty in a multitude of different ways. So like your sneaking difficulty, your combat difficulty, you are tuning all of it.
Shadow of the Tomb Raider did this too.
It did. And that was really, really cool. I loved that about Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Actually, I just loved Shadow of the Tomb Raider. It's an excellent game. If you haven't played it, definitely play that. And Rise. But there are a number of accessibility options that go along with that that aren't just about the game's difficulty, but how the game is being presented. Do you need colorblind mode? Do you need subtitles on? Do you need things to be, do you need the menu read to you?
Yep.
So
this is one of the earlier accessibility things that I started seeing. So a lot of games require you to tap, 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 tap to progress a QTE.
Yep.
There's an accessibility option for you just to press and hold.
Yes.
Which is a good one. And especially if you don't like that whole thing.
It's dumb.
Then you can just, you know, it doesn't need to be, you know, for accessibility reasons. It's just a great feature to have.
It's just a wonderful feature to have. And that is honestly what accessibility means to me personally. I may not necessarily need these accessibility options, but I love that they exist. And I love that different kinds of people can tailor their gameplay experiences to be exactly what they need them to be. And that, you know what? This is what companies are starting to care about. The fact of the matter is that this was both on Assassin's Creed Valhalla, an Ubisoft game.
Yeah.
And Watch Dogs Legion, an Ubisoft game.
So for all of Ubisoft's problems, kudos to the accessibility team there in putting that front and center.
Absolutely. And they have an excellent accessibility team, a bunch of accessibility teams that work at a number of different studios. Mm-hmm. So
hold on to that thought, though, about Ubisoft, because we're going to come back to that a little bit later. But let's talk about some of the games and some of the things we've noticed.
Absolutely. So, Mike, why don't you take us through Gears 5 and some of the top-level things that you notice between Gears 5 on Xbox One and Xbox Series X?
Just visually, obviously, across the board, we've heard the solid-state drives are going to make a huge difference. They absolutely do.
They do.
But Gears 5 running at 4K, I think it's running at, I wrote this down. It's not quite running at 4K. It's running at variable, so it'll run between like 1440 and 4K.
Let me grab your notebook.
Thank you. And it doesn't use ray tracing. It uses screen space reflections, but they are pretty. Really, really good. Like,
they're super,
I am
pretty.
Just done. If you want to talk about a game that has absolutely received a solid upgrade, Gears 5 is absolutely one of them. Yeah, it's variable from 1440 to 4K, and it runs at a solid 60 frames. It's absolutely gorgeous. The screen space reflections are handled just so pretty.
They're just so pretty.
Now, by contrast, and yes, this is not to diminish how good the game looks, but Forza Horizon 4, you played.
Yes, I have played a lot of Forza Horizon 4, to be quite honest, and I played a lot of it on the Xbox One. So when
on an X, to be very clear.
Yeah, yes? I played it on an X. I played it on, I think, our X.
And you played it on the S that used to be on your desk.
And I played it on the S that used to be on my desk. And it actually looks really beautiful on an S as well. It just runs like crap. So when I loaded it up on the Series X, the first thing and the best thing that I noticed, that load time, and let me tell you, the load time in Forza Horizon 4 is excruciating.
And you actually recently loaded it up, like this week loaded it up on your Xbox One X just to get a sense of it yourself.
Just to remember. And while I didn't exactly time it, it felt like it took double the amount of time. So I was sitting there and I'd watched at least double the amount of messages that I'd mm-hmm. seen over on the Series X. But in terms of its graphical quality, it's pretty much the same. There really isn't anything different between the Xbox One X and the Series X in terms of its fidelity. To be clear, Forza Horizon 4 is a gorgeous game. It was a gorgeous game on the S, it's a gorgeous game on the X, and it's a gorgeous game on the Series X as well. So no shade, it's just not different. It loads lightning quick, though.
Absolutely. I was going to talk about Miles Morales. I actually haven't had a chance to play it yet, and that's because I know if I start playing it, that's it. I'm done. That's where I'm spending my time.
Yeah.
But I have, you know, I'm really excited to play it. But we have watched you play Spidey Remastered. Why don't you talk about that?
Sure. So I actually dug into Spidey Remastered relatively recently, and I was playing it yesterday. So, wait, that was how many days ago? 5 days ago from when this goes live? It doesn't matter. Who cares? Time's a flat circle. The last time I played it was relatively recently. I am having so much fun with it. Those haptic triggers when I'm swinging through Manhattan.
Oh man, I can't wait to try those with Miles.
It's so interesting. And I love how beautiful it looks. Like, it is a heartbreakingly beautiful
game.
So
what you're saying is the puddles are okay?
The puddles are absolutely beautiful. I don't know what anybody was complaining about. Seems like those puddles are okay. I'm really enjoying my time with Spidey. I don't think I've seen a game look that beautiful potentially ever.
Yeah, and the traversal, it's just so much fun to watch Spidey swing, and it's so much fun to swing through New York. Very excited
also,
for Miles.
Mike and I just really miss going to New York.
That's true. I spent a bunch of time with Demon's Souls. That game is still hard as nails. I know that Bluepoint continues to do excellent work, and everything they touch is fantastic.
True.
I know, and I think Elise Favis over at Washington Post wrote this story asking them about why there was no difficulty settings, because this game is really, really hard. And they're like, oh, we wanted to be true to From Software's vision. And it's like, okay, I get that. But how does there being an easy mode that people can choose to play, if your normal mode, whatever, is entirely the same, if nothing has changed, you've got that artistic vision, you got that design intent intact.
Accessibility doesn't take away.
Right. If you have an easy mode and more people can buy your game and play your game.
I would play the game if there were some settings for me to choose, like, what my experience is. The big problem for me is not being able to pause.
Now, that's the thing. We go back to quick resume. You could actually... You can now. You can now technically.
I can now technically.
You
pause.
You can pause Demon's Souls now. So that's
okay.
Pretty great.
Well, I mean, maybe I'll go play it. Then.
But it looks gorgeous. Again, it's one of the prettiest games I've ever played, even in its bleakness. It's still really, really hard. I still keep getting my booty kicked. I will give it another try once I'm clear of this next work sprint that I'm in the middle of. But I'm looking forward to getting back to it. Astro's Playroom, we talked about a little bit already. I kind of spoke about, how much of that have you played at this point?
I've played one of the worlds. Okay. I've like won it. Like
you
one...
did GPU Jungle, right?
No, you did Meadows.
You did Memory Meadows.
I did Memory Meadows. So I saw some really fun references to like Infamous.
Yep.
And it's really
Heavy
cool.
Rain's in there.
Heavy Rain's in there. Like it's genuinely extremely cute. It's a love letter to Sony. And a love letter to Sony's games, and especially to those of us that have been gaming for such a long time and are able to see like the legacy of what the PlayStation has been and what it means to all of us and what those games mean to us. Like it's just an extremely nostalgic platformer, and it plays magnificently. It genuinely does. And the fact that this is free, it's a damn pack-in game.
Yeah. It's an excellent, excellent pack-in
how
game.
How is that even a thing?
And
it's
it has
so
some
wonderful.
Reason to come back to it once you beat it, and I platinumed it.
Are you done?
Yeah. There are time attack modes, and I know Jeff Grubb and Mike Minotti have been going at it on Twitter.
That does not surprise me.
I want to save discussion about Valhalla and Legion towards the end because we have something to talk about with regard to Legion. But talk about Tetris Effect Connected.
Absolutely. So Tetris Effect Connected is really interesting. I really enjoy Tetris. I played a ton of Tetris 99 on the Switch mm-hmm. in Nintendo Online. So I've played like competitive battle royale style Tetris, and I have gotten very close to winning that. It's the only battle royale game I'm ever going to be good at. I have a lot of training in Tetris. So Tetris Effect Connected, it's Tetris, but it's gorgeous.
It's Tetris meets Luminous.
It is Tetris meets Luminous, and I played a ridiculous amount of Luminous on the PlayStation Portable.
Oh, yeah.
That launch game, man. That game ate my life.
That's so good.
It ate it. It's a glorious game. You should definitely check it out if you haven't had the opportunity to. It's on Game Pass.
Yes, which is fantastic. All right. It's the moment you've been waiting for.
What moment is it, Mikey?
We're going to be talking about Bugsnax.
Talk about Bugsnax!
So tell me about Bugsnax.
Bugsnax is a horror game.
No, it's not. It's a body horror game.
Get it right, Pharaoh. Bugsnax is a horror game, but not actually. It is a really interesting game, though. It's like Pokemon Snap, but with so much more to do. It's like Pokemon Snap meets like a farming sim, kind of. I don't know. Bugsnax is the weirdest damn game I've ever played, and I'm so in love with it. It's also a game that has an extremely charming narrative, where there are discussions about like queer relationships. They don't make it a big deal. So a couple of women are in love and they're in a relationship together and they're currently missing. I mean, you got to go find them.
That's alarming.
You have to puzzle everything together.
Well, now you spoil it for me. Now I can never play Bugsnax.
I'll just play more Bugsnax for you. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
I do want to take a moment because we did receive some codes from publishers.
Oh, right.
So yeah. I do want to call out, Demon's Souls we received from Sony.
Yes.
We received Assassin's Creed Valhalla and Watch Dogs Legion from Ubisoft.
Yes.
And
Bugsnax I received is PlayStation Plus.
Bugsnax is PlayStation Plus. Tetris Effect is on Game Pass. Mm-hmm. Gears 5 and Forza Horizon 4 are on Game Pass.
Yep.
We purchased Miles Morales.
And Spidey.
And Spidey Remastered. And I'm going to be talking about a couple of games that that we got codes for. So we got a code for NBA 2K21 from 2K. We got a code for The Tourist,
which is very pretty.
I'm going to talk about it a little bit. And we got a code for Warhammer Chaos Bane, which I'm going to be talking about in a little bit.
All right, cool. So anyway, Bugsnax is weird. It is an extremely weird game where you are capturing bugs that are also snacks. And you yourself are, in fact, allergic to bug snacks. Oh, so you can only feed them to others. You cannot eat them yourself.
Okay. A tiny morsel of bug snack for a treat, but not for you.
But not for me. Not at all, because I'm allergic to bug snacks, as it turns out. All
right. I spent a lot of time bouncing around a number of games on the Xbox Series X because I wanted to see how they ran because they're on other platforms, and I've looked at some of these on other platforms. NBA 2K21, I spent some time with. I'm not very good at it, and I'm not a huge basketball fan, but I remember going to the PlayStation 4 launch event and looking at NBA 2K14 and looking at, like, this is going to be your fight night round three. This is going to be your game that sells on the visuals. And I still feel that way about NBA this time out. It is a stunningly gorgeous game,
but it's not NBA Jam.
It's not NBA Jam.
That's all I want. I just want NBA Jam.
That's fair. No Man's Sky, I've played on PlayStation 4. I have played it on PC.
Mm-hmm.
I really like what they've done to the onboarding. I am probably going to restart because it dumped me onto a radioactive planet to begin with, and that was just a nightmare and a half.
Were there nightmare spiders?
There were no nightmare spiders. There were no whispering eggs or anything like that. So it looks gorgeous. It loads very quickly. I recall that game starting you in first person, though, and now it starts you in third person, which is a very interesting change.
That's a change.
It is. Warhammer Chaos Bane, we played a little bit of, and then we said we need to put this aside because we want to go back and play it together on the couch. Because I'm looking at it, I'm like, it's not the prettiest game out there.
No.
And it's an action RPG. And I'm looking at them like these menus. It's like they took some very smart cues from Diablo 3 on console because the console port of Diablo 3 is fantastic.
It's amazing.
And then it clicked that it was essentially a Warhammer version of Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. And we're like,
we got to put this aside because we both love Dark Alliance.
I can't wait for the new Dark Alliance. But yeah, so if you are into Dark Alliance or you're into Diablo 3 on console and you have any affinity for Warhammer Fantasy, definitely can recommend Chaos Bane. The Tourist is a voxel game, and it is one of the prettiest damn games I've ever seen. It is very NES.
It's like that one and Cloud Punk. Those yeah. are the two prettiest voxel games I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, and Tourist, it's very bright, it's very colorful, it's got a great sense of humor. You start the game and you're on like a little speedboat, and it does not tell you what to do. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, this is giving me some serious NES vibes. Like,
where they just don't care.
Yeah, except there were manuals back in the day, so you could actually like get a hint from a manual. The problem with the Tourist is that the platforming as you get on in the game becomes a tad unforgiving, to the point where I was frustrated and needed to step away from it. I'd like to go back to it at some point. I think it's a fantastic game. Absolutely a showpiece in 4K. Holy crow. So definitely. And the last one we purchased, DMC5 Special Edition. And I didn't play DMC5 on PC or the other consoles, but that's another game where it shows off the video settings. Our TV only does 120 hertz and 1440, so I'm playing it at 4K 60, no ray tracing. You would probably want to play that at 4K 30 with ray tracing.
So much ray tracing. Just put it in my veins.
Again, it's another one of those games where I'm really excited to spend more time with it.
You know what we missed?
What do we miss?
We missed Observer.
Observer looks so good. That's the Bloober Team game with Rucker Hauer. Rest in peace, Rucker Hauer.
Absolutely. And actually, we received a code from for this game as well.
Yes, we did. I really like that game. I think it's gorgeous. I can't wait to play more of it. My challenge is I don't get motion sickness playing flat screen games.
It's got some issues and there some is some challenges.
Wobble when so there are different filters you can look through. There's like a bio filter so you can see blood stains, and there's an electromagnetic filter, but it has that very Blade Runner wobble to it.
It
and
does
something about it.
It
messes with my head.
It makes me a little dizzy.
I know Dutzman has some problems with some games and motion yes. sickness. That's I thought of him when I was playing this.
Yeah, that's definitely the kind of game that I would recommend my dear friend Steve to stay away from.
Yeah. So generally what we're seeing, look, everything that you expect from these consoles, we're seeing a lot more pretty. We're seeing a lot of granularity in the visual settings. We talked about the granularity in the accessibility settings. We'll talk about this more with Steve in a couple weeks.
Absolutely.
But I want you to talk about Valhalla first, and then Watch Dogs Legion, and then we want to talk about something challenging that we found in Watch Dogs Legion.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about Valhalla. I am a huge Assassin's Creed fan,
yeah, you
as
are.
You know. I played all of Ezio's storyline. I kind of fell off of Assassin's Creed for 3 because as a Canadian, I was like, ew, rah-rah America? No thanks. I wasn't really into
it. It's not as much rah-rah America. Listen, when he's stabbing people.
No, and I hear you, but at the time, in all of my ignorance, I did not play this game. So clearly I need to
but
go back.
But is Alexander Hamilton in that game? Because I haven't played 3 either. I've played Liberation, which is the one with Aveline, and she's amazing.
Liberation is very, very cool. So yeah, I fell off for a little while. I came back at Syndicate, and Syndicate with the Fry twins was so good, and it was so beautiful, and it was such an amazing experience that I've kind of kept up since then.
And then the reboot, essentially the franchise reboot with Origin, Odyssey, and then...
And now into Valhalla. I was going to skip Valhalla, to be honest. Even though I love Assassin's Creed, I was like, are we getting away from what makes Assassin's Creed truly exceptional? And that is the merging of the two kinds of stories. We have current times and we have assassin times.
The memories. The memories. The genetic memories.
That's right. And so I'm like, oh, are we getting too far away from this? And like, that's what I really loved is that this was such an enormous part of like all of the Assassin's Creed games that I loved. But so far, and I am 3 or 4 hours into Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I am sold. I am so incredibly sold on this game.
And you're playing that one on Xbox Series X.
I am playing that one on Xbox Series X with a code that Ubisoft sent us, mm-hmm. Which is quite lovely considering how utterly critical we have been of them show. So anyway, what I really enjoy about Valhalla is that it merges all of the things that I really did enjoy about Assassin's Creed Odyssey and... being able to play with all of these different kinds of systems. And there's this mini game where I can like roll dice and I can't remember what the heck it's called. Orlog, I think.
Yeah.
It's really fun. There are all these like really fun, cute little things to do. It's really easy to get lost in the weeds though. Mm-hmm. So if you are playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla or you have your eye on it, just know that if you get lost in it and you get lost in side quests, that's kind of the point.
Yep. And it still has that... Remember, Ubisoft has had some major changes on their editorial,
yes.
like that leadership team. And there was, by design, that very Ubisoft open world game. Now, Valhalla is a product of that still. There, it's indeed still icons on a map, right? So I expect that we're going to see a shift away from that as over the next couple of years, when the games that were touched by that old editorial team and the people who were ousted because of their poor behavior, their damaging, abusive, harassing behavior.
Yes.
No longer, you know, those games, when games that weren't conceived and greenlit under them continue to make their way through the development pipeline.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about Watch Dogs Legion.
This again, another icons on a map.
Icons on a map, and this was another one that I was going to give a pass to, regardless of how much I loved Watch Dogs 2.
And you loved Watch Dogs 2.
If you know me, you know how much I love Watch Dogs 2. I wrote an entire essay about Watch Dogs 2 and hacktivism, for crying out mm-hmm. loud. It was my very first professional, it was my breakout piece on mm-hmm. Mashable yep. in 2017. So Watch Dogs Legion, so far, is very interesting. I'm building up my hacking group of a bunch of women, and women of color especially. Like, I just picked up, like, a lady construction worker the other day. I guess that was yesterday. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, was that yesterday?
Yeah, time.
Time is continuing to be elusive. Mm-hmm. So, game is gorgeous. I love the music. I love how easy it is to drive and to get around. It's difficult to kind of code switch between Spider-Man Assassin's Creed, and then going into something like Watch Dogs, because I'm like, oh, I can't climb that.
And you've been playing Watch Dogs on PlayStation 5, and we haven't had any of the rest mode problems in Watch Dogs.
No problems at all with Watch Dogs Legion. So far, it's very interesting. I like the story. I like Bagley as an AI. He's kind of like this shit-talking AI, and I like him a lot.
And he's a necessary through line, because since you can, quote, play as anyone, and that's pretty much true, there's no protagonist. Now, thankfully, there's no Aiden Pierce. Well, I know he's being added. But there's also no Marcus.
But there's no Marcus.
So,
But I have him. I have his jacket now.
Yes, in the game.
In the game.
So Bagley is that through line. What's her name? The last, like, living member of DedSec.
Right, in London. Oh, I don't remember her name. It's hard for me to remember names because I just know their faces. Mm-hmm. I know what they look like. I know she has very cool bangs. She's the lady with the cool bangs. Mm-hmm. So
now this is interesting, and this is kind of why I wanted to save Watch Dogs Legion for last.
Of course. So one of the things that we noticed was that there are in the car when you're driving around, you're listening to music. We noticed that there are hit record pieces of music in there.
Yeah. Now, before we jump into this, if you plan on playing Watch Dogs Legion on stream, make sure you don't turn that off, because you're going to get DMCA'd probably. Now, as you might recall, the whole issue with Ubisoft and Hit Record came to the surface when it was announced that Beyond Good and Evil 2, they were soliciting community contributions.
I'm sorry, which game?
Yeah, the game that who knows if we're ever going to see.
Right, Vaporware.
Yeah. So Beyond Good and Evil 2, they were calling for community creations. I think it did...
I was very critical.
Oh, so was I. And I think it did spike on our radar when the same thing happened for Watch Dogs Legion.
It did.
But because Watch Dogs Legion is out and those songs are now in the game, we were able to do some research.
Yes.
And here's what we found out. Ubisoft contracted or commissioned Hit Record. Now, the way Hit Record works is they put out an idea. Like, hey, Ubisoft wants 10 songs mm-hmm. for Watch Dogs Legion, and here are the styles of songs that they want.
Right.
And then what happens is people submit contributions. Like, oh, here's a sick beat. Or here's a bass line.
Here's a chorus.
Yep. And then multiple people contribute to that. It is crowdsourced artistic creation.
Which is kind of neat.
It's very neat.
I like it because I love the concept of Hit Record, because it just... It feels so cool that you're all contributing to, like, one piece of music or one piece of art. It's neat as heck.
Right. Now.
But here are some problems.
First of all, it feels a lot like spec work.
It does.
And, you know, spec work... So, you've worked in the creative field. Can you explain what spec work is?
So, working on spec when you're a creative is that you are creating something not knowing how or even if you are going to be paid for it. Someone has said to you, hey, I want you to create me a logo and submit it to a contest to see if your logo is going to be chosen for this particular company. We are and that's what working on spec is all about, is you're creating something not knowing what you're going to be paid or how you're going to be paid or if you're going to be paid.
So that was kind of our one issue.
And I am extremely anti-spec work. Yes, I have always been that way. I never worked on spec as a graphic designer or as a web designer. If I did something for free, it was because I did something to donate my time. I did not ever go into a project without a contract.
Absolutely. So that was one big problem with Ubisoft looking to hit record. The other problem is that Ubisoft has an enormous war chest. They're a huge multi-billion-dollar multinational company.
They can afford to put a ton of money into this kind of creative expression. If they want the community to be a part of it, I love that. I think that's beautiful. I love the idea, especially of ensuring that younger artists that maybe haven't broken out yet or are students and they're just trying to like figure out what their style is or who they want to be as professionals. I love that. I think that that's wonderful. And the fact of the matter is that we know that Ubisoft paid Hit Record $20,000.
Yeah, $20,020 for 10 tracks. So that's essentially $2,000.
Exactly.
Per track.
Per track. And now, so we listened to one specific song that caught our ear.
And that was I Am Your Virus.
I Am Your Virus. And so we went on Hit Record and we checked it out. And I Am Your Virus had 26 contributors, according to Hit Record's website.
Yep. So we did some very simple math.
No, Mike did very simple math. I don't do math.
If you assume an equal split across those 10 tracks, which I think is a fair assumption, that's $2,000, $2,002 per track. And if you assume an equal split across contributions, now this is the one thing I didn't spend enough time to look and compare all the names on the 26 different contributions to it to see if anybody had multiple contributions. But let's say each of those 26 contributions is one track. We figured out that those contributors were paid a whopping $77 per contribution. So if you made one contribution to this song,
That was accepted.
You got paid $77 for that in a game that has already sold probably hundreds of thousands, if not over a million copies.
Indeed.
So our problem here is that the reason we noticed it is because you were driving around in the car listening to the radio and it was credited as Hit Record. Now you have to go to the website to see who was contributed and it just shows usernames. Now, we haven't looked at the credits for the game yet, but again, we know that people don't often actively go to the credits or watch the credits even when they finish a game.
Indeed.
So what is the benefit then for these people who have contributed to this game? They know themselves that they got into a video, that a piece of their work got into a video game? Like, it feels so abusive.
It's the intrinsic satisfaction. And you know what? I can't fault the intrinsic satisfaction of knowing that you contributed to something that you really, really wanted to be a part of. And maybe that could potentially be a foot in the door in the future, but there's no guarantee of that.
No. Especially if Ubisoft is only values these tracks at $2,000 a pop with no royalty.
Listen, if you are an artist and you are listening to our show, first of all, welcome. Second, do yourself a favor and make sure that you are talking to people in the industry who are working in the industry full time and have worked on contracts so that you know what to expect and what you should be asking for in terms of compensation.
More than $77 for your contribution.
Exactly. Additionally, make sure that you are getting in touch with a contract lawyer to make sure that you are being paid royalties. Okay? All right? Are we good? Let's talk about some big takeaways.
All right. So this is where we put the business hat back on. So the first thing is, again, we're at the start of a generation. This is all crystal ball stuff. These are things we're keeping our eyes on. These are trends we are watching for.
Indeed.
Now, if you know us, you know that each year we write our annual trends piece where we look back at the trends of the year and we have some thoughts about what we're going to expect. You can read our last piece on GamesBeat, which was published in late December of 2019. You can let us know how we did. I think we did pretty well.
I think we did pretty well too.
So one of our big takeaways that is a trend we're looking for, and this goes back to the conversation about quick resume and how developers might use that for fun. We're seeing major shifts in how we play.
Even more so than what we play.
Absolutely. So how we interact with games is going to change, and that's as a result of quick resume. It's as a result of the DualSense controller. It's as a result of solid state drives.
Absolutely. We're not going to be seeing much in the way of loading screens in the future. Not to say they're going to go away entirely.
Oh, Yakuza. I didn't talk about Yakuza.
Oh, okay.
But this is a good opportunity to talk about Yakuza because you can very clearly see that it has some very last-gen sensibilities because there are tooltips on the loading screens and the loading screens are up for maybe a second and a half. There's no way you can read them.
Here's this tip for you, but yep. also don't read it.
Also, Yakuza's amazing. That one we purchased also.
Yeah, we purchased that one. I might need to play a Yakuza game for the first time because now it's a turn-based game. So anyway, let's talk about the DualSense controller's long-term appeal. How is Sony going to incentivize that for third-party developers? Is that something that they're going to incentivize at all? And knowing Sony, probably not.
Yeah.
They're very focused on first party. They're very focused on internal. Third party is great, but they don't need them.
Yeah. So again, finding ways to ensure that those controller features get used and don't just languish like the PlayStation 4 DualShock 4 controller
and
speaker.
I don't know if that's necessarily going to be something that is going to be used for third parties, because the incentive there for a third-party developer is to make sure the game is on as many platforms as possible. And if these features don't exist on Xbox, and they certainly don't exist on PC or on Switch, why would they build just for one console?
Absolutely. Again, it's return on investment. How much are you going to spend on implementing that feature versus what are you going to get back on that?
And the only way that we'll know what that looks like is by keeping an eye on the way that third-party developers do utilize or don't utilize those additional capabilities.
Absolutely. Hey, you know what? Console gamers that started when we did way back in the day, you know, like on the NES, like I did, we're adults. And, you know, a lot of enthusiasts, especially, are savvier now. And we're seeing that open the door for more granular control of the experience. Remember,
not just graphic settings,
We're
talking about accessibility settings as well.
Yep.
Making sure that those difficulty levels are set in games where there are going to be a multitude of different ways that you can interact with the game.
Yep. This is, again, comes back to how you play, not just what you play.
Indeed.
I'm someone who prioritizes frames. You're someone who's likely going to prioritize things like ray tracing.
Like pretties. Yeah.
So, again, having those options even more granular is really... really powerful, but just as powerful is striking that balance. And we're going to see how this evolves, because remember, we expect both of these consoles to iterate at some point. Mm-hmm. We're going to see like a PS5 Pro. We're going to see an Xbox Series whatever.
X Plus.
It's so,
like New Game Plus.
Yeah, so we know that we're going to see that along the way. So seeing how that evolves is going to be really interesting. And it's still important that... Remember, console gaming...
It's plug and play, man.
It's plug and play. And it's not just about those enthusiasts who are super savvy. It's about people who have been playing and just like being able to plug a box in, connect it to their TV, and just go
Call of Duty. Yep. Play a sports game. You know, like, play the title. Play Fortnite. Play whatever they're most interested in without having to worry about getting granular if they don't want to.
Yep.
It's that level of accessibility and inclusion.
Yep.
Because there is a diverse range of people that are going to be enjoying these consoles. So being able to just plug and play for these games is really great. PCs, don't get me wrong, I started off as a PC gamer. I will be a PC gamer forever. And I recognize the importance of this for younger folks, for folks that don't necessarily want to deal with all of the headaches that come along with
having... Or the cost. It's still expensive to have a high-end gaming PC.
Yep.
And you are now getting...
Even if you buy it OEM.
Yep. Even if you buy it OEM. We know that at this generation especially, we are getting closer and closer. Again, PCs are going to continue to outpace what we get from consoles, but the quality of experience we're getting from consoles,
that
both
fidelity.
In terms of video and audio,
yeah,
it's amazing. And our last thing that we're looking at, look, quick resume and solid state drives are, I can't overstate how important they are to the impact of this generation.
It's amazing. Because I'm a PC gamer and because I have been playing on a PC for a long time, I've had a solid state drive for a long time in my primary system. It's great for when I'm able to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use it for my indie games. I don't use it for things that are relatively small. But being able to see the noticeable impact between Forza Horizon 4 on the Xbox Series X versus the Xbox One X is amazing.
And these features come at a cost, because storage expansion is more expensive than it's ever been.
It's going to skyrocket. And it's only, from our perspective, unless there is something done to ensure that the supply can meet demand, I don't know. I think it's going to get more expensive as we go.
Absolutely. And the final thing that we just want to remind you is, if you weren't able to get one of these consoles, keep checking online. We know that on the Sony side, they keep putting more up on their direct site. We wish you the best of luck, but also Microsoft has said, just to set expectations, we're going to see hardware shortages through Q2, calendar Q2, of 2021. We expect that PlayStation 5 shortages are going to be about the same. It's just right now it's about trying to get as many consoles into the channel as possible. You can't predict who is going to win this, quote, win this generation right now.
This isn't about winning.
Let's
make that entirely clear. These are about different philosophies. These are about different ways to engage with the communities. Xbox is about an ecosystem and about getting games in the hands of as many people as they possibly can. Sony is about that high-touch, exclusive experience that feels luxurious and, quite frankly, is luxurious.
Absolutely.
These are completely philosophically different ways of handling things, of apples and oranges, and quite frankly, you know who's winning the generation?
We are!
Well, okay, yes.
I mean, gamers. Yeah, players are winning.
Players are the ones that are winning, but also Nintendo, because Nintendo is eating everyone's lunch.
There we go.
And with that...
Yes, this has been episode 59, a bonus episode, our second of three launch specials. Thank you so much for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I am at Footerish, F-U-T-T-E-R-I-S-H.
And I am at Amanda Farrow. If this is your first time to the Virtual Economy Podcast, welcome to the family. We're so glad that you're here. You can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconomy.libsyn. That's libsyn.com/RSS. I should have a website up for Virtual Economy by the end of the year, so that may change. You can also listen to us on all major podcast platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts.
Pocket Sand.
Ah, Pocket Sand.
Right in the eye.
Right in the eye. Oh, it hurts. Please subscribe. We'd love it if you could subscribe. It lets the algorithm gods know that we are, in fact, important. And if it's possible, we'd love to hear what you think about our show. Let us know, review, and quite frankly...
Follow, share the show. Ask us questions.
There.
Did I get it?
You get a cookie.
Oh, sweet. You can DM us with questions at Virtual Econcast. You can also shoot them over to podcast@fsquared.biz. Or if you have some secret information you want to share with us for the reportings, we both have signals, so you can DM us individually or the Virtual Econcast Twitter account, and we will give you our signal numbers. So that's it. We will be back on December 5th. We are taking Thanksgiving weekend off.
Yes, we are doing very little other than eating turkey and pie and spending time with our family.
Yes, but first we must make the turkey and the pie.
Indeed.
Our next episode will probably have some news. We'll be having a conversation with Steve Saylor of Can I Play That about accessibility and
Absolutely.
Where we stand at the beginning of this new generation. But in the meantime, wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you soon.